Welcome back to On the Same Page. I'm your host, Emma Kirsting. On the Same Page is an Ithacan podcast where we break down the top stories in news, sports, and life and culture here at the Ithacan. This week we spoke to Dylan Albert from News about next year's housing situation in the Circles apartments, then with senior Jess Moskowitz for sports about recent changes in the varsity athletics staffing, and lastly with our newsletter editor, Jacqueline Reeves, about the New Voices Festival on campus. Let's get right into it. For a very fun special segment of On the Same Page, this week I have our video editors, Makai and Ray. Welcome to On the Same Page. This is a first time appearance for one of you. Because Ray has been on the same page before, I'm remembering now. So yeah, welcome. Please introduce yourselves. And what do you guys do at the video section for the Ithacan?
Thanks for having us, Emma. My name's Ray. I am one of the video editors at the Ithacan this academic year. And we make a lot of videos. Dare I say 100 videos this academic year, which is, I believe, why we are on the podcast. And we work with a great team. We have a team of about 16 or 18 staff members, and they're all incredibly talented, and we are turning out videos left and right.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Emma. My name is Makai Yanez. I'm the other video editor here at the Ithacan for just so far this semester. But it's just been an amazing year just to see all the content that's been produced throughout the year and throughout this semester. Yeah.
My first question would be for someone who... Any listeners who are unfamiliar with how, like, videos are made, what's, like, the general process for making a video for the Ithacan going from idea to getting it online?
Yeah, so our staff typically pitches, you know, different topics or ideas for videos. That can be event coverage, or maybe they have a series that they want to get started. Pretty much like anything that they're generally interested in creating a video about on campus or off campus, we can kind of coordinate that with them. And so we'll, you know, reach out to different sources, make sure it kind of has some sort of news angle or story behind it. And then they get assigned the video, they film, they're given the footage so they can edit the video. And then we get the footage back. We do a little bit of quick tweaks, and then we post it to YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook sometimes, and just kind of spreading the word and getting people to see the amazing content that has taken, you know, a week, 2 weeks, sometimes even 3 weeks to put together.
Yeah, I think our videos, especially this year, have been a very particular type of informative where our staff loves to do event coverage, but they also love to do these series like Getting Your Money's Worth, which was launched by a couple of our staff members, where they will explore resources on campus the students can access for free, and the audience of the videos, when they're watching them, they kind of get this new piece of information about something that they can do on campus or a place they can go. And so all of our videos are educational in that sense, where you learn a new trick, you learn a new destination, you learn a new resource.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. What does it take to make 100 videos in an academic year? Is there, I don't know, like what's... That sounds like a big deal. It feels like a big deal. So how did we get there?
It takes the team that we have. I don't think this would be possible with a different set of video staff members. They are as dedicated as people can possibly be to an organization. They're all incredibly talented. I'm learning new things from all of them every single week. And really, without them, I don't think we would scratch 60 videos. Last year, the video team was a team of, I think, 4 people. It was Maggie Bryan, who was the video editor. I was the assistant video editor, and we had 2 staff members. And now we have 16 or 18 week to week, and we have Makai and I. And really, without a team this large, we would not be doing the work that we're doing. And without a team this dedicated, we would not be doing the work that we're doing.
Yeah, I would just add that it takes a lot of collaboration to kind of create all these videos and create all this content. We're constantly pitching ideas, constantly, you know, working together to make new videos and new ideas happen. And just, you know, having that process of working with such an amazing team and such an amazing group of staff to really have a fun time making all this great content.
Yeah, absolutely. sometimes I'm in the office and I have the pleasure of seeing the video staff or witnessing a video meeting that happens every week. And I, of course, don't know like these students, our peers, as well as you guys do, because I don't see them as often and I'm not like directly working with them. But like the small conversations I have with them in passing, like you can tell that they really love what they're doing and they're having so much fun with it. And they're also at the same time still putting out like really strong, great videos. And it's very cool to watch them. And we watch them together as a staff sometimes. So that's always fun. So you mentioned that your videos go on YouTube and then they also go on some social media pages. So do you guys make certain videos for certain formats, or is it just kind of like a general formula for everything?
That's a great question. I think very recently in the digital news industry, there's been a large shift toward vertical video, TikTok and Instagram Reels style video. And we've definitely tried to break into that. We have series like Sports Update and our Life and Culture reviews of movies and albums that have definitely kind of been catered towards that audience. A lot of our longer form videos that are above 2 minutes and are shot horizontally, are launched on YouTube and on the website. And we've definitely tried to kind of vary the types of content that we have and choose content that's going to play better on one site as opposed to another social media platform.
Yeah, and in addition to that, we're constantly making socials cuts of those long form videos to just try and like really promote those as well. So we'll make 1 minute cut showing some of the best parts of those videos that are going on YouTube and the website, just to try and get more promotion for them and really spread the word and get people to watch them. So, yeah.
Cool. Also this semester, another milestone. We're just getting really a lot of accolades in the video section this semester. In February, you guys hit 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. So what has that been like trying to grow, I guess, like a following? How does it feel to hit that milestone?
I'd say it's just like constantly telling friends about it, like constantly, you know, telling people, hey, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hey, go watch the videos, you know, just like trying to like constantly put the word out. And it feels really amazing to see when, you know, a video is doing well and when a lot of people are really enjoying it. And when you're looking at some of the comments that are people, you know, being like, oh, this is awesome. And I think it's just a really amazing time to understand the hard work that's being put in is paying off. And I always definitely appreciate that.
Absolutely. And I think 1,000 subscribers, although I think in our time at the Ithacan, Mackay and I, we've grown from maybe 750 when I joined. It might have been around 750. These last 250 subscribers, I think they're a testament to the work that our staff does, because they're making videos that people want to come back and watch. And with our new series and with the work that they're doing, I don't think I could have 100 great ideas in an academic year, but they certainly can. And when they produce these videos, they are producing content that people want to see more of. So that's where our subscribers are coming from.
Yeah, that sounds great. Okay, now I'll ask the final question. You guys, this has been a pleasure. And for our listeners, I'm desk neighbors with Ray and Mackay, so we're just having a boatload of fun in this office. My last question for you guys before we go is, what is your favorite video that you guys have made or put out this year?
Mackay, would you like to go first? I can't decide.
Yeah, I'll say my favorite video that I've personally worked on has to be the Cortica video. It was a play-by-play. I loved being at Cortica, being on the sideline, filming, getting to like watch the whole game, like talking with Ray, because we also filmed some like shorts for YouTube and Instagram of like, you know, what was going on throughout the game. And it was just such an amazing time. And then to be able to go through the footage, rewatch it all, try and like put together the plays and the sequences. And then I did like a voiceover for it about like doing a play by play. That was just such an amazing time, because it was like one of like the first videos that I like really like did a lot of it. And so that was really great. That's probably my personal favorite video that I've worked on. Favorite in general, I might say, would be the 2023 or 2024 Grammys recap with Andrew Marcus. Just such a fun video. They did not need to go all out. Andrew did not need to wear a suit. They didn't need to go film in Dillingham, but they did. And it just made such a fun and great video. And it's one of my favorites.
Those are some incredible picks, especially the Cortico one. I mean, that was maybe, I feel like once or twice every semester that I've been doing this, I have a day where I'm like, this might be the best day of filming I've ever done in my life. And that one was so cold and so windy, and we had four or five of us working on it, and I was like running to Smitty Hall to upload the videos because there wasn't Wi-Fi on the field, and I ran to my dorm to get like hats and gloves for people. It was a mess in the best possible way, and all of those videos turned out so well. And Mackay's play-by-play with the B-roll from Mae Dennison was absolutely incredible. And the Grammys video is a fantastic one. It's just, you know, another example of the staff loving what they do and going above and beyond for really no reason at all, but it always turns out great. My personal favorite from this academic year, it is so tough. I got a lot to choose from, thankfully. Maybe our coverage of the Namgyal Monastery's library that they opened in October, or maybe September, I can't remember. But talk about a fun day of shooting. That was something else. It was a huge event. Parking was a mess. There were so many people there. We talked to people from all over the world, all over the country. It was incredible. That's also one of the rare videos I've done with the Ithacan where I've had to take multiple visits to the filming location in advance of the day of filming. I had to talk with the folks from the monastery who were all wonderful. And I had to coordinate with some professors at the School of Humanities and Sciences. And it was a big, there was a big lead up to the event. And it was also, I believe, Mackay's first video, question mark?
Yeah, that is true. It was my first video.
And that was great. You did a great job.
Thank you.
That's so awesome. I think one of my favorites is definitely the Grammys recap, but I also loved the Chili Fest with Tim, who went around and tried all the chilies, and he would give like 8 chili peppers out of 10 or something like that, and the graphics would pop up and it was a chili pepper with his face on it. That's all the questions I had. Do you guys have anything else that you want to talk about before you go?
I think if anything, I'd like to say thank you to the staff, the wonderful video staff. I could not do this without them. I've tried. It's hard. I don't like it. So they're wonderful. I'd also like to thank Mackay, who has been one of the greatest coworkers I've had in my 20 years as a living being. So thank you, Mackay.
Yeah, thank you, Ray. I would just like to give a big shout out to all the staff who worked so hard this year and who've made so many great videos. A thank you to Ray for taking me on as your assistant video editor and giving me the opportunity to try everything out and, you know, work with you. And just, you know, if anyone is ever interested in joining the Ithacan video team, I highly recommend it. And we're always looking for more people to film and edit, and we'd love to have you.
Great. Well, this has been fantastic, guys. Thanks so much for joining me. To our listeners, you can check out the Ithacan's video section on theithacan.org and also on YouTube when you search the Ithacan or on social media. There's so many places you can find it. It's great stuff. Definitely check it out if you haven't seen it. I'm here now with Dylan Albert, a news reporter, and she wrote a story this week about the Circles apartments on campus. So, Dylan, welcome to On the Same Page. Please introduce yourself and tell us more about this story.
Yeah, so hi, I'm Dylan Albert, sophomore journalism major and politics minor at Ithaca. Recently, there were housing decisions that came out for the upperclassmen, and everyone wanted Circles and everyone wanted Gardens. I noticed that there were a lot of juniors getting put back in Emerson for their second year and third year in a dorm building, and there were also a lot of seniors who got placed in Gardens and some in Emerson as well. So that raised a lot of confusion for me. And then when I did some digging through the Office of Residential Life, I kind of figured out that they're running out of space in terms of on-campus housing. And I thought I would just look into that and kind of tell everyone how difficult it is as a student to live on campus because of the costs, and also how difficult it is to live off campus because it's just that expensive.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm an RA, so this doesn't really affect me, and also I'm graduating, but I know, like, housing is always, you know, it's, like, a big deal for people. Like, that's where they're going to spend, like, a decent amount of their time, so they want to have a good spot. Yeah, so could you speak on, like, Who were your sources for this article? How did you gather your info?
Of course. So I first got some information from Ryan McCarty, who's the housing specialist at the Office of Residential Life. And he was great. He had a lot to tell me about the disparity and like the high demand for apartments and how the campus just does not have as many apartments for everyone who applied for one. I talked to Jeffrey Golden, who was the assistant vice president of auxiliary services. He was great as well, had a lot to tell me about Boothroyd and Eastman Hall. Eastman Hall is used for seniors and graduate students only, and Boothroyd is actually, it serves as employee housing now. So that was definitely interesting to talk about. And then I just thought that I would speak to some students, some who didn't get circles, but then through the reapplication process, got circles, and a lot of students who are still stuck in dorm buildings for their third year in a row who are definitely not too happy.
Understandably so. I think, you know, the dorm buildings on here on this campus are, you know, they got what they need. You know, you're getting up there. You've done your time. You've paid your dues. You want to move on to a more advanced housing setup. And, you know, the gardens and circles are more like private. They have their own bathrooms and their own kitchen in them in the apartments, which is always nice. So yeah, for this article, was there necessarily like a conclusion that you came to about this issue, or like are there plans for the future?
Oh, there are definitely plans.
Yes, for
definitely plans for the future. I figured out that there were 128 four-person groups that applied for apartments, but only 76 were available. So then they went through a whole reapplication process where 51 four-person groups reapplied for 14 circles apartments for five people. Super confusing. The article was very number heavy, so there was a lot of data to kind of sort through. In terms of that, I looked into how expensive it is to live off of campus, and the average cost for a two-person bedroom in Ithaca is $1,664 a month, which is very expensive. Also kind of how, if you do live in a dorm building, you're required to pay for a residence plan, like a meal plan, and the cheapest one is $6,870. So the conclusion is that there is still a lot of confusion amongst the student body, upperclassmen specifically. I guess the point was just to kind of clear the air, to kind of keep students in the loop, but also kind of get them off of Res Life's back at the same time so we can kind of figure it out. But I do hope to follow up. I want to look more into enrollment and see how, if there's like a constant rate of student enrollment continuing post-COVID, that maybe that has something to do with the overpopulation in the apartments and such. And I would also like to look into Boothroyd, the employee housing building, and see what the conditions are like there and how increasing enrollment might affect the employee housing program in the future.
Yeah, totally. Like, I love how, like, invested you are in this now. We love to see it. More about, like, the writing than the content itself. How did you end up covering this story? And if you know, like, how did it end up on the front?
Yeah, so I first found this story because I am a upcoming junior and was a student who was affected by this as well. I live in Emerson right now, and me and my three friends applied for a group of four with Circles as our top choice, and we got placed back in Emerson along with many other people that we were not expecting. So we made an appointment at the Office of Residential Life and actually talked to Ryan McCarty. And there was a sense of confusion there as well, and we really weren't sure what was going on. So I decided to dig into it, talk to some of my RA friends, and they kept talking about how there were certain vacancies in gardens and circles, yet a lot of upperclassmen were getting placed back in dorm buildings, like terraces, towers, Emerson. So I decided to just do a bunch of research. In terms of it being on the front, my wonderful news editor, Prakriti Penwar, we were talking, putting together the data, and I guess it just, at least to me, and hopefully other people, this story just affects a lot of people on campus and really impacts a lot of people. It's where they're going to be spending the next 10 months of their lives. And I know a lot of these students want that independence of an apartment. So yeah, this is my first front though, so it's very exciting.
That is very exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, and were there any like particular challenges with this reporting that came up?
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of information that I did not have access to in terms of like Ithaca's peer institutions. If we wanted to compare like how expensive it truly is to live here, Boothroyd itself, I would have loved, and I hope to be able to do this in the future, but I would have loved to talk to someone who currently resides in Boothroyd just to get that kind of angle and that perspective about an employee that is living in a dorm building. But that was quite difficult to get a source from. Besides that, I mean, Ryan McCarty was amazing. Jeffrey Golden was amazing. The students definitely had a lot to say. So I know not all of my reporting will be like this in the future, but thankfully it was quite smooth sailing. The only thing that I really had a problem with was just having so much information and trying to narrow it down and kind of structure it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a perfect segue to the next question I had planned. Were there any like bits of information that maybe you learned from your interviews or your research that just kind of didn't really make the final cut of the article?
Everything that we kind of figured out, some of the national data, because we were comparing Ithaca and the cost of tuition and like on campus, you know, room and board and what it's like to live off campus. We had a lot of that data, obviously, with schools that are similar to Ithaca, small, you know, private. So we didn't really put too much of that in there. We left out a couple of students' sources in terms of like, we just had so many students who were so unhappy that unfortunately not all of them made it into the article. But honestly, other than that, no, we included pretty much everything Ryan McCarty and Jeffrey Golden had to say, which were our two expert sources. And yeah.
Yeah, so that's all the questions I had. Thank you so much again for joining me. You've been a fantastic guest. Is there anything else about this article that you want the people to know before hopefully they go read this if they haven't already?
Well, specifically, I feel like if you have any concerns about your housing situation for the 2024-2025 academic year, ResLife is typically pretty good about this stuff. Their lack of communication is what sparked this article for sure. And I can understand if people have some sort of frustration towards ResLife because of that. But typically, ResLife does place people where they want to go eventually. Ryan McCarty said that nothing's set in stone until August. So I guess if any students are reading this and you're in a similar situation as I am, just kind of be patient. And thanks for reading.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Yeah, to our listeners, you can check out Dylan's article on our website at theithacan.org or on this week's print edition. So yeah, thank you so much again, Dylan.
Thank you for having me. Mm-hmm.
With me now, I have one of our senior writers, Jess Moskowitz, and they wrote a story about the athletics department here at Ithaca College. Jess, please welcome back to On the Same Page. Go ahead and introduce yourself a little more if you'd like and tell us, what is this story about?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited to be here. My name is Jess Moskowitz. I'm a senior. I've been writing for the sports section of the Ithacan, and this week I wrote the sports front looking at the strength and conditioning program here. Victor Brown was the head of the program for the past 10 years, and he left this winter to spend some more time with his family, so we just kind of took a look at what's been going on during this transitional period and how Ben Fleet, who's now the interim head, has been leading the program and trying to maintain that same standard.
Great. So can you speak a little bit on who you spoke to for getting your information for this article?
Absolutely. So what's been going on during this process is Ben Fleet, who I spoke with, is now the interim head of the strength and conditioning program. He is leading a team of graduate assistants and interns within the strength and conditioning department. Essentially, what they do is that they help the student athletes across campus with their strength and conditioning programs, what they do to train and to maintain their form and make sure that they're in top condition to compete. And so I spoke with Fleet himself, and then a couple of the grad assistants, Will McGinnis, who works with the men's lacrosse team, and Taylor Volmrich. They worked as an intern and are also on the rowing team here at Ithaca College, and was able to speak with a couple of other athletes from the golf team to the tennis team, basically trying to see how Fleet and this transitional program within the strength and conditioning department is impacting athletes across the campus, if different types of programs are doing better or worse, and just kind of seeing what's been going on during this time.
What was like your main takeaway for like the vibe that Fleet is bringing to the program? What's, You know, you mentioned that he wants to maintain the, like, high standards from before him, but has there been any, like, changes for better? What are, like, the main differences?
Yeah, I think so. Something that Fleet said and really wanted to highlight was the fact that Vic Brown, who was his predecessor, was also a real mentor to him. And he kind of feels as though Vic left the program in a really good spot. And so Fleet's kind of been trying. One thing he said was to try to keep Plan B as close to Plan A as possible. So just following in the footsteps of what Vic was doing, trying to honor the legacy that he left in building out the strength and conditioning program. And something else that he mentioned was just trying to make sure that even if they are short-staffed, even if they are going through this transitional period, that the quality for the student athletes doesn't differ. So making sure that there's still equitable time and resources being given to the student athletes across campus. And in talking to the athletes, it seems like they appreciate how much work Fleet has been putting in and recognize how hard he's working to maintain that standard. And so that was kind of my main takeaway was, yes, they are short-staffed, and yes, this is a transitional period, but Fleet and the grad assistants are really trying to make sure that the athletes don't feel any repercussions because of that.
It sounds like Fleet is really putting in a lot of effort and, like, a lot of care into the program, and that's great to hear when it comes to the wellness of our athletes. We've mentioned in a few different episodes of On the Same Page that we've had sports fronts in relation to mental and physical wellness for the athletes. So I think, you know, continuing the standard for Ithaca College varsity athletics to maintain those, like, high standards of wellness is really important.
That's something that's been really important to me in all of the stories that I've done, is just how we're kind of taking care of our athletes as human beings first, mentally, emotionally, physically. And so in speaking with Fleet and hearing how the strength and conditioning program is working, that was really important to me to hear him say, and also hear some of the grad assistants say, that when they walk into the weight room, when they meet with the athletes, that is their number one priority, making sure that they walk out of their session feeling like they were given the attention and the time as people and as athletes to best take care of themselves on and off the field, and that emphasis on mental wellness as well.
So were there any particular challenges that came up in your reporting?
I think one thing that was hard was, from the administrative point of view, trying to figure out, as great of a job as Fleet is doing, what is administration doing to help him out, to get some more staffing in there, to get some more permanent help. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to speak with anybody from administration, wasn't able to get a comment from them. So I think that was one of the struggles, was, again, as great a job as Fleet seems to be doing, and is great, the amount of respect and trust he has from his athletes and his assistants, I really wanted to know how administration is working to help him out, so that he's not working, you know, sunrise to sunset. And so I think that was one thing. One missing piece there was just, I know that they're in the hiring process, but wanting to find out what that looks like and what the timeline for that may be.
Yeah, absolutely. Jess, thank you so much for sharing with us today. Sounds like this was a really, really nice piece that you've written. To our listeners, you can check out this article online at theithacan.org, and it'll also be featured in this week's print edition. Jess, before you go, is there anything else you want to share?
No, I think that was a great conversation. Thank you, Emma. And yeah, thank you to the readers. Check out the sports section.
I'm here now with our newsletter editor, Jacqueline Reeves, and she wrote an article this week about the New Voices Festival. Jacqueline, please introduce yourself. Welcome back to On the Same Page, and tell us, what is the New Voices Festival and what did you write about?
Hi, my name is Jacqueline Reeves. I'm the newsletter editor. I'm a journalism major. Yeah, and so basically the New Voices Festival is a festival that is entirely student-run. It's actually the product of a class that happens during the spring semester, I believe. A group of students work together to curate a festival with, I believe, 7 different authors. And the authors come to the school and can discuss their works with the students. Something stand out, though, is that the students have been like intensely reading their works for the whole portion of the class. So they're reading their works, they're analyzing it. And so when they finally get to meet the authors, it's like there's a very big payoff because it's like they've been leading up to this for the whole semester.
Yeah, totally. How did you get your information for this article? Who did you speak to?
Yeah, so first I looked at, I believe it was the Ithaca College Writing Department. I believe they posted about the New Voices Festival. And I just looked at some people who were involved. I saw that Chris Holmes was involved. He's the founder of the festival. I also spoke to Emily, I'm not sure on how to pronounce her last name. I think it's Emily Trey. I apologize if I'm not pronouncing that right. But she was one of the students who was involved in taking the class and planning the festival. I also spoke to Erica Berry. She's one of the authors who's been invited to be at the festival this year. And I spoke to a couple of other people who were involved. I also reached out to a couple of authors. I got a lot of information from a lot of the students who were involved, the founders, Erica, one of the authors.
That's really cool. I think that this program sounds really interesting. And out of curiosity, is this the first time that this festival is happening? Why is it this year that the Ithacan is covering it?
Yeah, so this has been happening for a couple of years now. I think it's been happening as early. I was speaking to one of the people who helped plan it, Jacob White, and he was actually a New Voice Festival author in 2015. So this has been happening for a while. I think the reason why the Ithacan chose to cover it is because this is actually a really great resource for students to interact with authors, gain some firsthand knowledge of what it's like to get into the field and how to become published that they may not know about.
Yeah, I think that something the college does really well is to interact with people that are currently in different fields that students can study here, and like being able to have that connection, even if it's just like you're attending an event and hearing someone speak on what it's like to work in that field, I think is really valuable. Like, it's not just that we're learning about these topics in class and eventually we'll hopefully have a job in that field, but like being able to meet people who work in that field, like me personally, being able to meet people that come to like the Park School and they're like, I'm a journalist and this is what I do, is like really a lot of fun because you get to see like the different niches that people follow. So yeah, that sounds really cool. Is there any like particular like genre of author that this festival looks for? Or like, I'm assuming New Voices is like newer authors.
Yeah, definitely. So New Voices, kind of like the title suggests, is new authors, newly published authors. And something exciting is that since a lot of these authors are newly published, a lot of them have won awards. I think it's the Penn Faulkner Award. One of the authors, Claire Jimenez, she recently won that award for one of her books. As for genres, they look for everything. I know that the author that I interviewed, Erica Berry, she actually has a background in journalism, and her book, Wolfish, is a mix between journalism and personal narrative, and she really just combines those two in a very interesting way. Something else that I thought was interesting is that they actually have a playwright who graduated from Ithaca College, and they're going to be doing a reading of one of that person's plays in Dillingham. It's going to be directed by an Ithaca College alum.
Yeah, I feel like, again, that's like part of that connection that the college wants to have with like people working in the field, and especially like our alumni, current students being able to see that success and like interacting one-on-one or like in real life with these people, I think is really important. And that sounds really cool. Did you go to the festival?
The festival hasn't happened yet. It's going to start taking place next week. So starting from like the 21st to like the end of next week, that's when events will happen. I am hoping to go to a couple of events. I'd like to meet the author, Erica Berry, in person because I just thought she had a really interesting journey. And I'd also like to go to Dillingham to see the reading of, I believe the name of the play is I'm Gonna Marry You, Tobey Maguire. That is the name. That is the name of the play. I actually heard that it just finished like an off-Broadway run. So that's actually very exciting that students will be able to perform that. So yeah, I hope I can see that. Because once again, I really just like how the college directly connects students with alumni and helps students gain an understanding of like, okay, after I graduate, like this is what, you know, is a possibility for me.
This is a very exciting event, sounds like. That's kind of all the questions I had. Is there anything that you're like, like a big topic that I'm missing out on that you're like,
I'd just say like something that was mentioned among a lot of the people that I interviewed was the fact that the New Voices Festival that Ithaca College hosts is very unique to the college. This is an opportunity that most colleges don't provide, an opportunity to interact with newly published authors on a personal level and get that sense of engagement. So even if you're not interested in writing or being a published author or anything like that, I still think it would be fun and possibly beneficial for you to check out one of the events happening if there's any time.
Great. Well, thank you so much again for joining us. And to our listeners, you can check out Jackie's article at theithacan.org or in our print edition this week. This has been On the Same Page. Thanks so much for listening. You can check out all the stories mentioned in this episode on our website at theithacan.org or in this week's print edition. You can listen to more episodes of On the Same Page and our other shows when you search The Ithacan anywhere you stream podcasts.